years, I'm sure are aware of the fact that I try to preach to the needs of the people. I think an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And the best time to solve problems are before the problems start. I think preventive medicine is far better than curative medicine, especially as is true in the life of the church. But I see something beginning to arise that I think could become deadly. I immediately try to attack it. But I'm a little put out with myself, and I'll wait that long. For I feel the right kind of preaching will prevent such things as even beginning. I've never given a shoulder to the list about which I'm going to speak to anybody, but I have a list of things that I think are needful for a church's health and for Christians' growth and spiritual maturity. There are 20 things, and if you'll sometimes just take mental note or even write it down, you'll find that everything I say from this pulpit is wrapped up in about 20 different subjects. I think there are 20 spiritual vitamins that every Christian needs, and I'm not going to share these with you this morning or ever. Occasionally, I'll give you one of them. I think I could preach better sermons, and maybe I'm making excuses for my poor preaching. I do not know. But all of my preaching here is built around what I think you need, not on a good sermon I think I can preach. That's why I seldom preach on heaven, though I do believe in heaven and include it in almost every sermon. I seldom preach on heaven. I try to preach to the needs of the people. One thing that I think is necessary for the development and growth of a healthy church is to have a periodic sermon on unsaved church members. There are many reasons for this. I'll advance a few of them after a while. But I'm afraid of the health of a church that is not constantly keeping its church members aware that you're saved by being born again rather than by joining the church. If you'll read the 13th of Matthew sometimes, you'll find that Satan sows his tares among the wheat, not beside other tares. A tare is something that looks like the wheat and is not even distinguishable from the wheat by the natural naked eye. Satan comes to churches, the best churches, and puts in the churches people who look like they're saved, who talk like they're saved, who live like they're saved, and who act like they're saved, but who really are not saved. Did you know the average denomination this morning that has decayed because of the mixed multitude? It was not pruned. There was not the constant stress on you must be born again. Look over to the University of Chicago, for example. That university was built by the sacrificial dollars of God's people. The University of Chicago was built by fundamentalists. Today, it is a harboring place for every kind of foul communist doctrine in the world. I personally doubt if there is a square or an area in America of corresponding size that has done any more to condemn this nation than has the University of Chicago. Now, how did it become that way? I'll tell you how. It became in the hands of the mixed multitude. A group of unconverted people seized the board. Unconverted people seized the authority of the university. Now, if a church stays like it ought to stay, it must keep its mixed multitude at a minimum all the time. For the mixed multitude tends to grow faster than the born-again people. Decay is always faster than growth. It is always easier to fall than to jump. You can fall easier, faster, and farther than you can jump. It is a harder climb uphill than it is a walk downhill. That means that constantly the devil is trying to take churches like this, and he does it through the mixed multitude. Now, hold it. I'm not talking about the drinking crowd. I'm not talking about the people that are on the church rolls that don't look like Christians, act like Christians, talk like Christians, or live like Christians. I'm talking about that mixed multitude that gets in the church that look exactly like the people of God. The church has always had them. It's always been so. The mixed multitude. Now, when the Israelites, and listen carefully, when the Israelites left the land of Egypt, Brother John led us a reading a while ago, there went with them a mixed multitude. Who are they? Who were they? Some of these folks were dissatisfied Egyptians. Some of these were people who did not like the reign of the Pharaohs. They were people that did not like the establishment. And they left with the Jews when they left the Promised Land. Give me just a trifle more treble, fellows, if you would, just a touch more. They left the Jews as they left the Promised Land. Or with them, as at the Promised Land. Others were from other slave groups. Let's suppose, for example, that the Negroes in America decided to leave and go to Mexico. Now, with them, no doubt, would go other dissatisfied minority groups. Perhaps some Mexicans would go. Perhaps some Jews would go. Perhaps some Indians would go. Are people of other minority groups that feel they're getting an unjust deal here in America. Now, the Israelites, the great 3.5 million about Israelites, were leaving the land of bondage. They had been subjected to terrible rigor and servitude. There were other people also who had been subjected to the same servitude, who were dissatisfied in Egypt, though they were not Israelites. And so they joined the great crowd as they made their exodus from Egypt and crossed the Red Sea and took off toward the Promised Land. They were known as the mixed multitude. Now, it's always been so. The first family that ever lived was a family of mixture. Adam was saved. Eve was saved. Abel was saved. But Cain was religious but not saved. I think Adam and Eve and Abel were all born again. Cain looked like he was. Cain acted like he was. Cain was a spiritual man until he got found out. But in the first family, there was a mixture. Religious. Now, I'm not talking about one a drunkard and one a preacher. I'm talking about all of them religious. All of them look like they have the same thing. But one was counterfeit. In the 12 tribes, the 12 sons of Jacob, the 12 tribes of Israel, there was one who was a mixture, an off-breed, a hypocrite, a fake, an imposter. His name was Dan, who was found out in the end. In the 12 apostles, there was one who was of that mixed multitude, Judas Iscariot, who looked like he was one of the 12, who acted like one of the 12, who preached like one of the 12, who cast out devils like one of the 12, who walked with the 12, looked like the 12, acted like the 12, but was not one of the 12. He was of the mixed multitude. The apostle John, in writing to the church at Ephesus in Revelation chapter 2, said, "Thou hast tried those that say they're apostles and are not, and hast found them liars." Now, just as sure as I'm standing behind this pulpit this morning, in this great church, there are people, faithful, I'm sure we have unconverted deacons. Now, I don't know who they are, and I'm sure it would be the deacon that I would least think would be the one. But I'm sure that on our deacon board, Satan would love nothing better than to place some tares. I mean men who are good men who are faithful men who are tithing men who are honorable men who are faithful men who teach Sunday school classes, men who come to the deacons' meetings, but men who've really not been born of the Spirit of God. Now, we must constantly be weeding those men out, getting those men converted. We don't know who they are, so we have to get them converted so we'll have a deacon board of regenerate men. Listen. I'm afraid the average church across America this morning is operated by a board of unregenerate men. Why? The mixed multitude comes in. And that's why about once every four or five months, I substitute a sermon like this for what I think would be a better sermon in order to remind you it doesn't matter how you live. It doesn't matter what you join. It doesn't matter how good you are. You got to get born again, you see. And so I must constantly be stressing to our deacons, men, know that you're saved. Know that you're born again. Same thing would be true with our over 400 teachers and officers in our Sunday school. I'm sure in the great Sunday school we have, one of the greatest in all the world, I'm sure that Satan would love to come in and place a mixed multitude behind the desk in our Sunday school. I'm sure that right beside the born-again people, Satan loves to put his tares. And so I must constantly be stressing this. Why? Because I don't want any child in all of our Sunday school to sit at the feet of a teacher, regardless how moral, regardless how good, regardless how faithful, regardless how generous, who's not really been born again. And so I must come to you teachers this morning and not ask you, are you a good person? But I must ask you, have you been born again? Do you know you've been born again? Do you know you've been saved? Do you know you're a new creature in Christ Jesus? It's happened that way all the time. Now let's look at this mixed multitude. In the first place, they had left Egypt. They had left Egypt. You pick out one of these men traveling with the Israelites and ask him a question. Say, fellow, I want to talk to you. What kind of life are you living? He'd say, I live just like the Israelites do. I've left Egypt. I no longer obey the wicked Pharaoh. I no longer worship the Nile River. I have put all the old heathen religions behind me. I have left Egypt. I no longer bow and worship the Nile River. I no longer feel that mothers should throw little babies into the crocodile's jaws as an appeasement for the great God, the Nile River. I have left Egypt. I no longer act like the Egyptians. I do not eat what the Egyptians eat. I do not drink what the Egyptians drink. I do not use the language of the Egyptians. I do not act like the Egyptians. I act like the Israelites. I have left Egypt, but they were still a mixed multitude. The Egyptians worshipped, as I said, the Nile River. They had their sacred cow. Did you know their sacred cow was chosen much like a pope is chosen? And I might say, had just as much spirituality. The chosen just, you say, I don't like that. Well, then you just figure out the best way to lump it you can. You can use sugar or salt, or you can put some orange juice with it. But any man that dresses himself up and says he talks in the place of God when he speaks ex cathedra, he's infallible, he's an imposter, a crook, and is going to stand before God in the judgment one of these days. But the sacred cow. They have a sacred cow, and this old cow, when old Bossy passed away, Bossy number two would come. And if you'll go to Egypt now, I've been there, I've seen it. You go to Egypt now, they have their kings buried in sacred tombs and their cows buried in sacred tombs. But if you said to one of these fellow folks in the mixed multitude, say, how are you living? I no longer worship the sacred cow. The Egyptians, for example, worshiped the frog. You know, they thought the frog was the god of the resurrection. You know why? You can figure that out. And they'd see that frog jump like that, and it's, uh-oh. That's the god of the resurrection. And they'd worship the frog. But you ask one of these snakes and mixed multitudes, say, oh, well, how is it with you? Well, I'll tell you what. I have quit the old life. I no longer drink. I no longer curse. I no longer dance. I no longer use God's name in vain. I live like the Christians. I've left Egypt. I don't act like Egyptians anymore. I'm not in that heathen religion anymore. But the simple, basic truth was they had not been born as Israelites, and they were still a part of the mixed multitude. Now, may I say this? Walk down the streets of Hammond someday. Ask the average person, are you a Christian? And many of them will say, I live as good as anybody else. I've left Egypt. I don't drink. I've left Egypt. I'm good to my neighbor. I've left Egypt. Ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't matter what you've left. That does not substitute for being born in the right family. Doesn't matter what you say, I quit drinking. I'm a good guy. But you'll be a good guy in hell if you don't get born again. May I plead with you in the name of Jesus Christ, if you are not saved, get saved. No matter how far away from Egypt you've been. The honest simple truth is, the hardest fellow to get saved is the fellow who's the farthest in Egypt. Look at that story in Luke chapter 18. Two men came to the temple to pray. On one side, here was a fellow who said, I thank God I'm a good man. I'm not an extortioner, an adulterer. I fast. I give tithes of all that I possess. I thank God I'm a good man. Here's a man over here that did not fast and did not live a life that was clean and did not go to church and did not give tithes. He knew he was lost. This fellow didn't know it. Or would admit it. He was too good. It is infinitely easier to get a drunkard saved than to get a man who's not a drunkard saved. Why? Because a lot of people think because they left Egypt that they're in the promised land. But that's not true. Just because you've left Egypt doesn't mean you're on your way to the promised land. You can leave Egypt and go the other direction too. But there's a second thing about this mixed multitude, and that is they joined the church. I mean, literally, they joined the church. Did you know that Israel was called a church? In Acts chapter 7 and verse 38, when Stephen preached to the Sanhedrin before he was killed, he called the Israelites the church in the wilderness. The church in the wilderness, which means this mixed multitude had actually joined the church. Ask the man on the street, are you a Christian? Sure, I've been a Methodist all my life. Are you a Christian? Sure, I'm Presbyterian. Are you a Christian? Sure, I was confirmed as a 12-year-old child. Are you a Christian? Sure, I was baptized as a baby. Are you a Christian? Sure, I'm a Baptist. Are you a Christian? Sure. Well, the Hiles baptized me. I belong to First Baptist Church. No, you're not a Christian unless you've been born again. This mixed multitude, they joined. Think what they'd seen. Stop for a minute. Hey, fella, I want to talk to you. You don't look like you're a Jew. You look more to me like one of the Semitic tribes. Maybe you're an Egyptian. You're with the Jews. Yes, I've joined up with the Jews. Look, what have you seen? Are you saved? You better know I'm a good guy. I have left Egypt, haven't I? And I have joined up with the Israelites, haven't I? And none of that. I crossed the Red Sea. I was one of those who went over on dry ground. I saw that pillar of cloud by day and that pillar of fire by night. I've been following that. I've been lined up with God's people. I saw Moses come to God and pray for God to give manna or food. And I saw the next morning, like the dew of the morning, I saw the manna from heaven sprinkled on the ground. I saw Moses take that rod and smite that rock in Horeb, and I saw water come out to feed 3.5 million Jews. That's what I've seen. Well, that doesn't make any difference. You can still die and go to hell. You ask some folks, are you saved? Yeah, I saw a vision one time. I saw Jesus in that vision. Doesn't make any difference. You can go to hell seeing visions. Are you saved? Yeah. My Norman Vincent Peale kind of stuff. My pet dog got sick, and I prayed for God to heal him, and the dog doesn't have distemper anymore, so I believe in God. Well, bully, bully for you. I'm sorry, doggy, doggy for you. I am sick up to here of the average concept of the Christian church that does more than preach a gospel of letting the Negroes marry the whites and getting the ghettos all cleaned out and solving our race problem, when man's need is not in the race problem and not in the ghetto. The dirtiest, stinkingest place that needs cleaning out is right in here in the heart of man that is desperately wicked and deceitful. You get the heart right, you'll get the ghetto right. You let McGovern, God pity his benighted soul, you let McGovern and all the rest of that left-wing crowd take over, and they'll not clean up the ghettos. The ghettos are there for one reason and one reason only, and that is because man's hearts are sinful. The Church of Jesus Christ would go back to preaching the new birth, that man must be born again. We'll do more to change society than all the left-wingers and social gospelers will. God pity this National Council of Church crowd. Churches spend more time with marches on Selma than trying to get folks to march to Zion. Preachers spending their times on the Father Groppy kind of garbage, lining up with the left-wing social gospelers and socialists and communists trying to destroy America. We had none of these problems back in the days where we had some old-fashioned Billy Sundays and Sam Joneses and Dwight Moody's and fellows who preached the new birth, where every pulpit across this great land had a man of God behind it, almost every pulpit, a man of God behind it, who thundered out Sunday after Sunday, marvel not that I say unto you, you must be born again. Except a man be born again, he can no wise enter the kingdom of heaven. And may God give us in this generation the realization the dirtiest ghetto in the world is right out of this shirt. You've got to get born again. You've got to get born again. You've got to get born again. And so I see the Israelites crossing the Red Sea, and with them I see this mixed multitude. I see the First Baptist Church of Hammond having 5,000 in Sunday school, but with them I see the mixed multitude. I see 81 deacons going to the deacons' meeting, but I see some mixed multitude. I see 400 teachers going to teach on Sunday morning, but I see some of the mixed multitude. I see thousands of members, godly people, good people, best church in all the world. God pity these modern cufflinks. I put these things on this morning. I said, fellas, you'll never make it through the day. God pity these pussyfooting, hair-tickling, back-scratching, nickel-nipping, penny-pinching, soft-soaping, pink tea and lemonade cufflink makers. That's good preaching, ain't it? The mixed multitude. They had left Egypt. They had joined the church. Oh, may I say, being a member of First Baptist Church does not mean you're going to heaven. Quitting your drinking and your bad life does not mean you're going to heaven. If I had one thing I'd like to do in the city of Hannon, I'd like to go down to All Saints Church right across the street and let them give me 45 minutes. And I'd like to preach one sermon. Ye must be born again. I'd like to go right on down the street to the United Church of Christ. One of the pastors told me he did not believe the virgin birth. He told me himself. I'd like to walk inside that church and have 45 minutes and preach, ye must be born again. On down to First Christian and all the churches in town. God pity these seminaries and colleges turning out a bunch of sissy preachers who know nothing about grace, know nothing about regeneration, know nothing about the new birth. They're filling our churches with mixed multitudes. But let me say from this pulpit, there has gone and there will go periodically a sermon of warning. Deacons, Sunday school teachers, members of our church, hide not behind the church membership. Hide not behind the fact that you left Egypt. You've got to get born again. Something else I want to say. Not only have they left Egypt, joined the church, but the third thing is this. They began to influence God's people. Brother John read to us a while ago, Numbers chapter 11. They have crossed the Red Sea. They have come nearly to Kadesh Barnea. Now they have trouble. Would you like to know who started the trouble? The mixed multitude. Listen to this. And the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting. And the children of Israel also wept. And said, who shall give us flesh to eat? Why did the Israelites weep? Because of the mixed multitude. They got out yonder in the wilderness, almost the land of promise. And the mixed multitude said, we wish we were back in Egypt. We wish we hadn't gone. Well, I made a suggestion. If I'd been Moses, I'd suggest they go back. Somebody would have said, well, no, but we'd drown in the Red Sea. And I'd have said, that's what I had in mind. But the mixed multitude, listen, 'tis the mixed multitude that builds these dance halls in our churches. 'Tis the mixed multitude that lets these hippies come in with their little, what do they call these little rooms they have? Had one down at All Saints. What do they call them? Coffee shops. 'Tis the mixed multitude that allows that to go on. 'Tis the mixed multitude that brings this rock music in our church. I don't care what the words are. 'Tis the mixed multitude. 'Tis the mixed multitude that says to our preachers, you preach us smooth things. The average church in America, back 20 years ago, if they had said week after week, you got to get born again, 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 we wouldn't have had this mixed multitude grow like it's grown. And so our churches, listen, you go to any church in this town this morning that is Protestant, I don't care how liberal the church is. I don't care how liberal or socialistic the pastor is. You will find in that church a band of born-again people who won't get out because grandfather was a member of the board here. They're born again, which teaches us one thing, that there was a day when the mixed multitude was not in the authority. But the mixed multitude said, the first thing they did, they decided to put some mixed multitude on the board because the mixed multitude was because they had some rich mixed multitudes.
Here's a fellow. We have, you know what?
Well, the richest men in town joined our church. Now, God knows this is true. If the richest man in Hammond walked down his church this morning and got converted, it wouldn't increase my blood pressure any more than the smallest, poorest little ragamuffin kid that came off one of our buses. Not a bit. Not a bit. I'd be glad he got converted, not because he's rich, but because he ought to get converted. But somebody says, did you know that Mr. Richemup is a member of our church? He'd be a good board member. He has respect in town. Who needs respect in town? We need board members that have respect uptown. And so what's happened is this. Our churches, the average church, is run, operated, and controlled by a bunch of unconverted people who know nothing about regeneration. And I go to these churches, and people, and there are folks this morning, right here this morning, they come to First Baptist Church, and I could point to half a dozen right here this morning. Your membership is in a church pastored by an unconverted man. Run by an unconverted board. And you come over to First Baptist Church to get your battery charged every once in a while so you can go back over and spit and sputter over there. You run out of gas again. What you want to do is heed the admonition of our Lord who said, come out from among them and be ye separate. The minute the mixed multitude is in the majority, you better head back for the promised land. So the mixed multitude said, we remember Egypt. Wish we're back home. And the people of God began to cry.
And they said, we sort of liked it back in Egypt too.
You need not look for me down in Egypt's sand, for I pitched my home far up in Canaan's land. But they didn't say that. They're affected by the mixed multitude. But here's something else. 1,000 years pass. 1,000 years. Did you know Nehemiah 13:3, the man of God stands up in great revival. And the interesting thing is he had to say, let's first get rid of the mixed multitude. They're still there. 1,000 years later, 40 years in the wilderness, across the Jordan, through Jericho, into the promised land. They were there when Gideon defeated the Midianites. They were there when Saul was anointed king. They were there during the reign of David. They were there when Solomon was at his zenith. They were there for 70 years in the land of Babylon in bondage. And now the people of God, 1,000 years after they leave the promised land, are having great revival. A temple has been built and destroyed. Bondage has come again and returned back to the land. And one of the first things they have to do is get rid of the mixed multitude. Now that reminds me that we have to constantly be preaching to the mixed multitude. The lady walked down the aisle in our church last Sunday night, one of our finest ladies, and said, Brother Hiles, I was a church member for years, but I was not born again. It happens over and over and over again. You say, you're trying to get a bunch of baptisms or conversions. I couldn't care less. I just don't want any unconverted person teaching my kids in Sunday school. I don't want any unconverted men. Look, when our deacons sit down in that chapel next Saturday night for our meeting, and we hold in our hands the future of this church, I don't want somebody standing up speaking about the future of this church who holds in his hands your child and my child's future who does not know he's saved. The mixed multitude, always there. Wait a minute. They're hardened now, 1,000 years later. This fellow had kids, unconverted religious folks. His kids were unconverted but religious. His kids unconverted but religious. His kids unconverted but religious. Until now you walk up and say, you one of God's people? It's too late now. It's been 1,000 years. Ladies and gentlemen, the time to admit that you're a part of the mixed multitude is as soon as you leave the land of Egypt with God's people. When you walk down this aisle in this church, and if not in your heart, completely settle this matter of being born again, even if you just still have not yet dried your hair from being baptized, you get it settled. You get it settled. We had one Sunday morning in this baptistry dressing room out here, a man. He got baptized, came back in, and dressed. He was standing at the mirror combing his hair. As he was standing there at the mirror combing his hair, I said, man, I'm sure glad you got converted. He said, thank you. I said, you did get saved, didn't you? Well, he said, I think so. I said, now, wait a minute. Sir, are you born again? And he said, well, I joined the church. Before his hair was dry, after being baptized, he bowed on his knees right up there and got born again. That's the time to do it. Brother, while your feet still have the sand of the bottom of the Red Sea on them, while you still are just crossing into the wilderness, if you don't know that you're saved, that's the time to do it. You know why? Because you can pretend so much till you yourself can be deceived. You can pretend so long till you'll be so calloused you wouldn't get saved for the world. Are you saved? Are you born again? Huh? Are you? Are you saved? You say, I'm bound for the promised land. I know. But do you have the Christ in your heart? You say, I've left Egypt. I've quit drinking and cussing. That won't do a thing when you stand before God. Well, I joined the church. That won't matter. I've been baptized. That won't matter. I've been confirmed. That won't matter. I'm a Baptist. That won't matter. I'm a Methodist. That won't matter. I don't care if John the Baptist baptized you and the Pope serves you Holy Eucharist for breakfast every morning in bed. You will die and go to hell if you've not been born again. For one far greater than I stood to the greatest Bible teacher of his day and said, except a man be born again, he cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven. One far greater than I pointed to the outstanding theologian of his day and said, marvel not that I say unto you, ye must be born again. Now, this morning we're all on the same church roll. Most of us. Most of us been baptized in the same baptistry. We have the same pastor, same staff, hear the same choir, go to the same Sunday school. But as sure as there's a devil and as sure as God's word is true, sitting out yonder in these pews this morning, there's a mixed multitude. Not only is your future determined this morning by whether you make it sure or not, but the future of this church, as we Sunday by Sunday and year by year do our best to keep a regenerated church membership, it is essential and necessary. Are you saved? Simple enough, isn't it? Isn't that simple enough? Are you born again? Are you? Let us pray.